Although I'm thinking about the name, you know, marzipan. It's like a thin layer of sweet stuff wrapped around sort of boring cake in the middle. And they try to say app kits are sort of boring cake in the middle and UI kits strapped around as a sort of sweet outer layer. Welcome to Season 1, Episode 14 of the Swift Over Coffee podcast. I'm Paul Hudson.
And I'm Sean Allen.
Now, I've been busy doing videos every day for the 100 Days of Swift, and even putting the final touches to my plans for my own conference here in the UK. What have you been up to, Sean?
Well, I've also been doing 100 Days of Swift. Haven't been able to do it every day, but I think I'm on day 9. It's a great refresher. I'm really enjoying it, actually. So sincerely, you know, thanks for doing that. But really, my whole week has been dominated, or 2 weeks, I guess, has been dominated by being my own HR department and in interviewing iOS developers, you know, for my replacement, which I've been talking about over the past couple episodes. So that's been fun. We're getting really close. March 12th, we'll have the final interviews and make the decision. And I'm genuinely looking forward to that because I'll be able to start somebody's iOS career and really just get them started in this world that we all love. And that's going to be amazing because up until now, I've been having like the bad stuff where as people get rejected, I've been having to send the rejection email. So it's going to be really nice to send that really nice congratulations, you've got it email.
You made it. And these are the final in-person yes or no time.
Yeah, right. We did 6 of those last week and we got to the top 2 and we just couldn't decide. And, you know, we don't want, you know, I am cognizant of the candidate's time. I don't want to waste it, but we are going to have to bring them back in for just one last round between those two because the team was really indecisive. And it's an important hire for us. They're going to own the entire iOS app. So, you know, going forward, it's a pretty important spot.
And it can't be long till you come to the UK for iOSCon, right?
No, it is not. And that date is creeping up on me to do my first talk here, March 21st and 22nd. So that is my number one priority for March. So for those that are fans of the YouTube channel, you're probably only going to see Swift news for the entire month because I can't not do that, right? But no other videos because I'll be focusing on getting my talk ready.
You mean it's not finished yet, right?
Barely started.
No!
I'm definitely locking down and starting tonight, actually. I'm not even just saying that. It's already on my to-do list to really lock that down. But Paul, do you want to talk about something special we're doing at iOSCon?
Yes, we're going to do a live podcast at iOSCon in person because both of us are going to be there in London. So if you are a big fan of the show, please come along to iOSCon. See Sean and I record Swift Over Coffee in person. Hopefully, it'll be a similar sort of format, some news, a pick, open ballots, with hopefully more audience interaction, probably beforehand, but it'll happen no matter what. I'm really looking forward to it.
Now, Paul, did I hear you mention you're doing your own conference? It sounds like a lot of work.
So I think last year or the year before, I did a number of Hacking with Swift live events, which were online streams. One was like, I think a few were 8 hours long, like a full day of Swift. And then a few were, I think, 3 or 4 hours long. And they were great and got a lot of great feedback about that. But this year, I want to do Hacking with Swift live in person, an actual conference here in my hometown in England. And it's probably going to be 2 days. We're looking at July 8th and July 9th, almost certainly those 2 dates. And we really want to hit folks hard with hands-on experience, like come and try out all new cool things Apple announced at WWDC, lots of all new tutorials from me, and I'll try and fly in some of my favorite speakers from around the world. So it's really going to be a great event. And hopefully, really soon now, we'll nail down the final date and start announcing it because I'm so excited to get this thing moving.
Nice. It sounds super exciting. And if you didn't schedule it so close to me being already there in March, I would have been able to make the trip. You know, well, that's a big assumption, Son. That's assuming I was one of your favorite speakers. You don't have to answer that. I'm just going to pretend I'm in that group, okay? We can just leave it at that.
we'll know in about, 3 weeks.
Yeah, exactly. That could be the worst speaker ever, but we'll find out. Stay tuned for iOSCon 2019. All right, Paul, let's talk about some news. To kick things off, let's start with Ted Kremenick's blog post. He is the leader of the Swift core team, discussing Swift 5.1's release process. So here we are talking about Swift 5.1. 5.0 isn't even out yet. What are we doing? Paul, do you have any guesses on when 5.0 will drop? Like, are we just going to wake up one day and it's going to be out? Like, it's got to be soon, right?
Does have to be soon, yes. I mean, we'll know in a few days. I think we might see another beta released on Tuesday or thereabouts. But if not, it's a sure sign they're very close to release. And this post from Ted, it's another one that fits into the current Swift.org blog schedule. And here's roughly when things might happen. And it is good to have some forward notice. I'm not, you know, saying otherwise, particularly because Apple are working inside very tight constraints, given how much their work is closely guarded secrets. But I do wish we'd get a little bit more detail, like, you know, here are the things we hope to ship in that release. Here are the actual features we'll plan to ship in that release. That's my hope. And there's not much in there yet.
Yeah, that's a good point. I mean, we knew a lot about Swift 5.0. I feel like we don't know much about 5.1. But let's get back to that release process. And he did say that 5.1's primary goal is to achieve module stability, whereas, you know, 5.0's was ABI stability. And, you know, just to kind of wrap up what this process says, you know, final branching will be on March 18th. And, you know, after that, there's that typical bake period for a couple months where only select critical bug fixes get in. But March 18th with a bake period. It sounds a lot like a WWDC release to me. It's always been like a couple months. Like the bake period for 5.0 started in like November.
So if you recall that the bake period for Swift 4.2 was hilariously the 20th of April because it was 4:20. Yes, let's face it. This would fit perfectly with the plans for Apple and everyone using Swift. So we could all get to module stability as soon as possible, which would be great. Because that's the thing folks, I think, confuse with ABI stability, because they are two sides of a very similar problem, making thing A work alongside thing B. Now, in the case of ABI stability, that's about making two pieces of compiled Swift code work together. And in the case of module stability, that's about making two pieces of uncompiled Swift work together. So it allows us to ship frameworks in Swift, regardless of which Swift version we were on or which the framework's user's source code was on. It would all just work.
All right, moving on, we have a pitch on Swift Evolution. Now, a pitch is the very first step in this process, you know, where someone makes a forum post and then they start getting feedback. This pitch was brought by Tony Avaletu of Google and is suggesting an official Swift style guide. As of now, the community has a handful of popular style guides, but like nothing official. You know, Ray Wunderlich has one, Google has one, LinkedIn, Airbnb, etc. But this is proposing, you know, like one official style guide to rule them all.
Yeah, so it is Tony from Google, but also Dave Abrams from Apple, who is the probably one of the more famous Swift team members because he gave the crusty talk at WWDC. He's the professor of blowing your mind on the Apple Swift team. So he's in a very, very strong position to make a good case for this. And it's proposing the existence of a style guide, although it's nothing entirely as to know how strongly it's enforced in practice.
Yeah, and I think that's the key there. But the instant I heard this, I was like all on board. Hell yeah. But I don't know, I thought about it for like 3 minutes and actually completely switched to being against it. And, you know, many developers, myself included, are highly, highly opinionated about how they code their format. It's a little ridiculous, but, you know, that's how we are. You know, like if you put your opening curly brace on the next line after a function, like you're wrong and I will fight you. Like, you know, like kidding, obviously, I'm not going to fight anybody over some code style. But, you know, opinions on this can get pretty extreme. And if Swift gets an official style guide, you know, with a linter built right into Xcode, that's going to be the dominant style, you know, in the space. So now imagine if that style included something you were vehemently against, you know? So I think it's fine how it is using popular community style guides, you know, to base your code base style from.
Now, if this style guide includes something you don't like, so what? I mean, we're not talking anything remotely actually serious here, just formatting of code. You know, when I see some code someone's typed out and it is not the style I would use, as long as it's vaguely sane, I'm okay with it. You know, what I can't handle when I get a proper eye twitch is when they are not consistent with their own code. Like, I'll see someone on Twitter have, like, colons before types, and they do space, colon, space, or space, colon, which is really weird, or colon, space, the standard. And, you know, okay, space, colon, I can't handle, but the other two I'm okay with. But at least pick one and stick with it. So I'm looking forward to seeing some official enforcement of something from Apple. Like, if even a Swift lint was baked into Xcode, that'd be a big step forward. But when you come to a language, I think it's a generally good idea to try and fit in with the way it's written, just broadly. And Swift's no different in that. In fact, I remember writing some Python code some years ago and getting real flames from the Python community because I'd use tabs rather than spaces because, like, PEP 8 or something, Python Enhancement Protocol, whatever it is, was saying you must use spaces rather than tabs. And okay, fine. Just chill out, my friend. You know, I'm sorry I've used the wrong kind of white space. You know, I remember reading the very first time and seeing the way the Swift reference guide, the official Apple guide when it came out, Swift 1, the way they indented switch case statements. And it wasn't what I was used to because I prefer to indent case one level deeper than its switch. But Swift put switch and case on the same level. So I switched and the world didn't end. My code carried on compiling. It's amazing.
Yeah, but it's still fun to fight about, right? I'm just kidding. No, I mean, I get what you're saying. I'm just very, very particular about my code format.
What do you do then when you join some fancy new company in a few months and they have a different style to what you use personally? Will you surreptitiously stay up after work when they all go home and change do thousands of commits to change it to your personal style or what?
No, I'll just say thank you for the paycheck.
Right, exactly. Now, the thing is, if they were using your style, because you all use the same community style guide, that'd be great.
Well, I don't know. I'm just not sold on it yet. Maybe I'm just projecting the worst, right? You always say I'm the optimist. Ooh. Well, I think I'm flipping here right now and going to like the negative thing. You know, it's probably not going to be bad at all. It'll probably be very similar to how I do things anyway, but I'm imagining it doing insane things or insane things. Insane. I made up a word. Insane things, you know.
This is like Mirror Universe Sean Allen. He's honestly, you need to read Eric Ossidon's Swift Style book. You haven't read it already. It's a great book because it is called something like An Opinionated Guide to Swift. And it's literally what she thinks is good Swift. And honestly, she just nailed so many things in there and it ended debate on lots of things. It changed the way I wrote Swift to be more like her style of Swift. And it became the new standard. And at this point, things people are doing they think is just some community standard is just actually things Erica said to do became adapted as the convention now. So I want to see those things become the standard. Just basically take her entire book and say that's standard. We want the bigger things. And I will switch more or less to whatever gets decided. As long as it's not space colon. Like, you know, variable name, space colon type.
Everybody has their line in the sand. That's the one you don't cross.
what's your line in the sand then? Let's hear your line in the sand. Mine is space colon, like your var name, colon, space colon, string. Drives me at the wall. Can't handle that at all. What's your
I already said it. It's when you put your opening curly brace after a function on the next line, on a new line. Like, no, what? Get out of here. Stop that.
Yeah, so the one true brace style. I think that's fairly safe, I think, that one. No matter what they end up agreeing on, I don't think it's likely to be enforced. Like, it'll have it. It might say you warnings here and there, perhaps. I don't think it's likely to say, sorry, bad Swift, try again. Particularly, we've now all seen the damage SPM, the Swift package manager, did to Carthage and CocoaPods. And Nick Lockwood, who wrote Swift Format, has said he's worried the same thing might happen to Swift Format and Swift Lint unless Apple really do deliver what's needed. Because when they said SPM's happening, work on Carthage and CocoaPods slowed down, if not almost stopped, thinking, oh, Apple's doing their own thing. And SPM just dragged its heels at glacial speed. It still doesn't do iOS projects today. So I don't want to see that same thing happen to Swift Format and Swift Lint, which are still doing great work.
Yeah, that's a very good point. Let's move on and talk about Apple announcing that developers will have the ability to offer discounts to existing or previously subscribed customers. Now, this will be new in Xcode 10.2. So if you want to play with this, you'll have to download the beta. But I think this is a great thing. You know, subscriptions are becoming the go-to way to monetize. So the more flexibility developers have in their pricing, the better.
Subs are such an important part of the revenue mix these days. Now, I really would love to see someone dabble in the whole Netflix for app space, but I know it's complicated because, yeah, you know, do you pay folks by time spent using the app or number of times opening the app? And if it's time used, you basically end up paying folks to make the app slower, so you just spend more time in there. You know, I remember one of the apps I worked on, I launched some years ago, was an app for Mac Life magazine, which is, or at least was, a large magazine for Mac users in the US, and it had 90,000 subscribers on iPad. And that's way more than it was getting in print at the time. But as soon as you lost users, it was really hard to get them back because you couldn't have those discounted offers as sort of 1 week or 1 month free. So this new thing from Apple, you can have fresh offers of folks coming back, is just really welcome.
As always, Paul, let's talk about our picks for the episode. What do you got?
So my pick this week is Loaf from Matt Schmidt, which is a Toast framework for iOS. And Toast is something that Android's had for years. And it's the ability to pop up a brief message in your app when something important happens, like someone liked your tweet or you got a new email or whatever. And this is something Apple just hasn't full stop embraced. They just don't want to do this thing, which is always left a sort of void in that space. You know, we either accept it's not part of our platform and we skip it, or we just build our own.
Or we let Matt build it for us and use Loaf, right? And that's what you're saying? Is that where we're going?
Yeah, and Matt has done a really great job of making something that couldn't be any easier to use. I mean, it's literally one line of code. It couldn't get any easier. And he's baked in a variety of lovely styles so you can show from different screen edges, animate in and out, use different background colors, add an icon and more. I just saw him adding the ability to add a completion handler that gets called when the toast is swiped away.
Nice. And so this isn't, you know, a built-in iOS thing. So is there a need for this, I guess?
Well, I guess it depends on the problems you're facing in your app. I think it's safe to say we can all agree the standard UI alert controller doesn't look great. It looks bland. It's not customizable at all. It just feels a bit dull. So in my own work, I like to use something like Swift Entry Kit. Bring those alerts to life. It looks fantastic, you know, full color backgrounds, gradients, pictures, whatever you want to. It looks fantastic in comparison. But you have much more control over your alerts. And to be fair, Swift Entry Kit does do Toast as well. They are just much bigger than Matt's new Loaf framework. You know, he's made them super simple and small, so they aren't really intrusive. I mean, I don't know if you use the official Twitter app much.
Yeah, I do.
Yeah, but they use Toast-like things a lot. You know, if someone you follow tweets at you or sends a DM while you're in the app, a little blue bar sort of animates in saying so-and-so tweeted at you or replied to your DM, whatever. And it's much nicer than using an alert because it doesn't sort of get in the way of using the app. You can carry on sort of writing your tweets or looking around or reading tweets and just glance down and see this thing happened and then carry on using the app. Anyway, that's my pick. What do you have this week, Sean?
My pick this week is an article from Jordan Morgan of Buffer talking about what it takes to be a best-in-class iOS app. Now, Jordan's been a huge fan of the Apple Design Awards, and over the past few years, he's been curating this list of qualities that, you know, all these apps seem to have in common. He's put together an amazing list of features that are supported, you know, in these world-class apps and put them into five categories: accessibility, platform technology, user experience, design, and app store presence. And I think this is a great list of things we often forget about, and you know, we should aspire to them. Now, they're not all applicable to every single app, and they would take a ton of work to implement, but again, it's a great resource to look back at and cherry pick some of those features to implement, you know, when you have time.
I don't think every app can support every feature, and he's not asking for that really, but there is a certain sort of hygiene level I think we should all be aiming for. The sort of key subset of features that folks need to have just to use the app on a day-to-day basis.
Right. Agreed. And again, this is a long list for each category. We're just going to cherry pick, you know, two or three to talk about. So let's start with accessibility, which is a big deal. And, you know, your voiceover needs to be on point. Like, your app should be usable and intuitive using, you know, just voiceover. Fully support dynamic type. And we've talked about this a lot on the show. You know, remember, about 40% of the users are using dynamic type. So you pretty much have to adapt to that. You know, and then things like colorblind support and 7:1 color aspect ratio, and the list goes on.
Yeah. So these things are exactly those hygiene features. Dynamic type should be on a standard these days, and that number, 40%, still blows my mind. It's incredible. And if you are doing things that interfere with voiceover, and I say you to the audience listening to this, if you're doing things that interfere with voiceover, please just stop. People rely on this for their day-to-day lives. Stop it, please.
Agreed. The next category is platform technology, which is really just supporting the latest and greatest from Apple. You know, this list is all about taking full advantage of this amazing platform we have. You know, things like adding keyboard shortcuts if your app supports, you know, the iPad, including share and action extensions, Siri intent support or donate your Siri shortcuts using drag and drop, etc. Really, it's just all about, again, taking full advantage of this platform. And I think so many times we see these cool things released at DubDub each year, and then we just forget about them 6 months later and never fully capitalize on them.
Well, yeah, ultimately, a lot of folks have to support, you know, N-1 iOS versions. So iOS 12 is out right now, so they're going to have to support iOS 11 as well. So they sort of watch DubDub and say, that's really cool. Wow, amazing stuff. Wow, I can't use that for another year. And then when that year goes round, you know, 19 happens with, you know, iOS 13, whatever Apple announced this year, they go, oh, look at this stuff. And they've forgotten the previous year stuff they can now actually use. So it's difficult to do. Now, these ones here are obviously a little bit less common in their usage, but I do expect Apple to be really on the lookout for Siri shortcut apps this year at the ADAs.
And I'll combine the next two categories, you know, for the sake of time, because like I said, this is a very long, very thorough article. And that's user experience and overall design polish. And we should aspire for these two topics to be incredible in our apps, because to me, this is what makes the iOS platform, you know, stand out. Things like state restoration, tappable areas that are at least 44 by 44 points, you know, delete actions that are followed by a confirmation prompt so you don't just delete things without getting a confirmation. The navigation should be clear and foolproof, you know, good use of haptic feedbacks, you know, using vector assets, etc. And like I said, I could go on and on and on, but user experience and design polish are absolutely huge on this platform. So this is the category where I'd start if I were using this list to kind of like assess my own app.
You know, even after all these years, I still don't understand exactly why UI buttons don't have their own sort of 44 by 44 minimum content size, you know, intrinsic content size stuff, auto layout. You know, we all know to stick to this size, particularly with the iPad mini shrinking it down in terms of actual finished pixel size. But for some reason, Apple never really enforced it. It's just sort of they make buttons tiny by default. I am definitely keen to see more vector assets, though, because Xcode makes it super easy. State restoration, though, that's one of those things like everyone knows they should do it, but no one really does it.
Right. And did I hear an iPad mini reference in there? What is that? What is this iPad mini you speak of?
we both have pros, man. We're both the big ones.
Right.
But you've got an iPad mini. You've got the iPad Pro 10-inch or 11-inch, right?
Is that your version of the mini?
Yeah, I've got 12.9-inch.
I see what we're doing here. Okay, moving on. like I said before, like I just really love this list. I know it's a lot of work. I know it doesn't apply to all apps, but it is a very aspirational list, and I'll definitely be keeping it, you know, in my links here to use as a reference. Anytime I want to, you know, improve my apps, I can always go back to this list. And remember, software is never done. So this list will certainly keep you busy for things to build.
And now it's time for our open bot. This time our question was, is there still money to be made in the App Store? If so, how? And if so, please can I have some? We had some answers here. Now, previously, Sean suggested off the cuff that we could do a whole episode in the opposite accent to what we'd normally use. So he'd sort of speak in his finest British accent. And I speak in my terrible American accent impression. And helpfully, we got a reply from Marco Pont, friend of the show, that gave us me the perfect opportunity to try this out. I'm going to do one word of it because it really matters here.
Yeah.
He said, the needs are vast and the people are fickle. What's popular today can lose its popularity tomorrow. The key is to find a niche and serve it well. The riches are in the niches. And I say that in my one word American accent. We would say niche, Sean. Niche. Nice, long, drawn-out niche. But doesn't matter if riches, so hey.
No, I know. I was thinking that, too, when I saw this, because it's actually interchangeable. I heard half people say niche, half people say niche. And, yes, but, you know, the riches in the niches doesn't really roll off the tongue, you know?
Yeah, the riches in the niches. Yeah. Are you more sort of vase or vase?
Vase.
Oh, dear.
Yeah.
I'm sorry our friendship will be so short.
Okay. Podcast over. This was a great run on Swift Over Coffee. 14 episodes. We made it.
We had another response from Engin Kuratepe, who runs UIConf in Berlin. Helps run it. He's part of a team. And he says, yes, apps that provide real value to small, underappreciated markets, for one. Go after your niche hobbies. Enough people care if you care. Nice, catchy line there. And Richard Garrison says, having worked in the construction industry, semiconductor industry, insurance industry, education and martial arts, I understand things that are lacking in those particulars. I do have many app ideas I'm working on, and it's actually the main reason I got into programming, which is fantastic. You know, it's sort of like the old sort of Steve Jobs quote about the intersection between technology and liberal arts is where it makes our hearts sing. And I've long believed that if you follow the path that you are not a beautiful and unique snowflake, that, you know, there are a million other folks in the world out there like you, whether that's snowboarding, in case of you, Sean, or basketball, or perhaps not so much snowboarding, that you make an app that scratches your itch, that solves your problem that you have or had, you will find a million other folks out there like you who will pay for that because you've scratched their itch as well.
Yeah, that's the beautiful thing about the long tail of the internet and kind of what the internet provides is, like you said, there are millions out there just like you. I mean, you could be the expert on Ninja Turtles and make a living, you know, being that guy, thanks to the internet. So I agree. Find your niche, whatever you want to call it, and build a product around there that you love. And like I said, many other people will love it too.
We had some answers about subscriptions. Jorge Mendoza says, every new startup needs an app, so there are tons of potential clients for development. Also, selling some sort of subs seems to be a nice business model. It's about building businesses and providing them with apps. Louis de Baer says, apart from the really big players and a few unicorns, a subservice is the way to go if you want a stable app business, and Apple knows this. And Mihai Leonte says, many good apps have recently gone for an expensive subscription model. I think it's a good opportunity for small teams to make a killing with a fair price today.
Yeah, this is exactly what we're doing at Aluna, the startup I'm at. So the app I'm building will be a subscription app. And as these, you know, comments have said, is this is the way the industry is going, right? You know, we had the first race to the bottom, you know, 99 cents, then free, then in-app purchases. Now we're moving on to subscriptions. It's just the next phase. So yeah, this does seem the way to go to make some money nowadays in the App Store.
Yeah, I do worry slightly that some of the subs money is people who just forget it's running. They subscribe and then just don't worry about it. And it carries on running and running and running. And there's money there only because they forget about it.
That's a large portion, I bet.
It probably is, yeah. And I don't necessarily mind it. It's kind of like joining the gym a little bit. You know, you join the gym and you kind of plan to go and then don't quite go this month and maybe go next month or the following month. And that's where gyms make their money. So I guess it is a standard business model. Speaking of money, we have an answer here from Santos saying in-app purchases. But when adding IAPs, make sure your app is still enjoyable for those who don't purchase the extra features. Michael Miles says game add-ons. However, 30% Apple puts quite a dent in profits. And Ish Shabazz says there's still money to be made in the App Store, but it's a lot harder than it used to be. I think the key is to focus on serving the needs of the underserved and to not underprice an app with hopes of making up in volume. So Ish and his colleague Heidi launched a fantastic new app recently called Capsicum. I remember trying it during the test flight. And it's an app where they've clearly put a lot of love into building a planning app. It's a sort of habit tracking app, but it's beautiful. They put a lot of work in making it feel exactly right. And unsurprisingly, it was featured by Apple, by TechCrunch, and by others. So it does look and feel really, really good. So he's managed to find what you would think, quite frankly, was a saturated niche in the App Store. You know, a habit tracking app. It's not quite a dramatic breakthrough in terms of the idea, but he's done a really good job. And he's priced it appropriately, saying, you know, it's a premium app, you'll pay for it with a subscription model attached to it. I mean, they charge $20 a year to get access to the unlocked app, which is a good price. It's a premium price. But if you like the app, it's totally worth it. It will transform the way you live your life. It will actually help you. And he's right that underpricing never works. The volume isn't going to be there unless you happen to have vast numbers. So ask folks to pay what it's worth, and that could be $10 or $20 or more.
And I want to touch on Santos and Michael's comments here. Like what Santos says about the in-app purchases, you know, make sure your app isn't like borderline unusable without the in-app purchase, you know?
Like every game ever, basically.
like pretty much, yeah. That doesn't sit well with the customers. You know, and then I want to touch on what Michael says about how, you know, giving 30% to Apple. And this might be the attraction of the new subscription model is, I believe after a year, you know, going from 30% to 15% on the subscription, you know, after 1 year. So 15% is still a lot, which is why, you know, Netflix has recently, you know, you can't get a subscription to the App Store because 15% of a Netflix subscription is a lot, you know, when you're on a scale of Netflix. But it still does alleviate that 30% pain a little bit.
And also, they're handling all the sort of credit card transactions and all the refunds and customer support and distribution, giving you the market in the first place. I don't really begrudge Apple that money. I think it's actually pretty cheap in the grand scheme of things. And one to end on, we have Cypher Poet saying, it's a tale as old as time. Build something valuable and money will come if you price it right. That sounds like a Kevin Costner movie to me, Sean. Is that right? Field of Dreams?
Oh, I didn't know where you're going with that.
Oh, yeah. Waterworld.
Oh, no. If you build it, they will come. That's
exactly
what you're talking about. Okay.
Exactly, yeah.
It took me a second to get there. I was like, what is he talking about?
Yeah, it's baseball, not basketball, right?
So no, exactly. Yeah. Baseball is an old person sport. I don't know what that is. So that's going to wrap it up for this episode of Swift Over Coffee. But as always, we got to leave you with something to think about, and that is the next open ballot. What would it take to get you to leave a review for Swift Over Coffee? We're willing to do anything here, you know?
Sean's willing to do anything. Me, not so much. Right. Well, no. I think we should start reading out the reviews folks post on the podcast thing, because only a handful of folks do. We ask every time. We've got thousands of listeners now, which is fantastic. Thank you very much. Only a handful actually leave reviews. So folks, come on, get with it. If you want to encourage us and build us up and get us doing more podcasts, leave a review.
And now for the real open ballot, because I know that's what you really want to hear. Let's talk about macOS. Are you making a Mac app now? Are you waiting for Marzipan? Or do you just ignore the Mac completely? So that's the real open ballot. Tell all your friends to subscribe. And like we said, you know, leave a review. And don't forget to follow us on Twitter at Swift Over Coffee. And we'll see you in the next episode.
Bye.